Yesterday, just about everyone in America had a dinner party, and no one knows more about how to throw a dinner party than the hosts of the public radio show The Dinner Party Download, which ended its 10-year run last year. After that, the hosts of the show, Rico Galliano and Brendan Francis Noonan, turned their attention to another meal, brunch, and wrote a book called Brunch is Hell, How to Save the World by Throwing a Dinner Party. I spoke with them when the book came out, with Brendan in New York and Rico in L.A., and started by saying I don't agree with the premise. I like brunch, especially with a good Bloody Mary.
Oh, I mean, yeah, maybe the at the moment you're served that Bloody Mary, it feels joyous, but the hour it took you to get at that table to drink the Bloody Mary, and then the 2 hours after you have your $75 plate of eggs and avocado toast, that's really the heart of one of 2 days you're given off each week, and you're destroying it by spending it at brunch. So that's the problem.
Right.
Not the Bloody Mary itself. I support a tomato juice and vodka drink.
Yes. And it's, you know, like after that, maybe that day you were going to, I don't know, write a screenplay, or you were going to go hiking with the kids, or you were going to go visit grandma.
And now you'll do nothing.
Now that you're day drunk, you're just going to sit on the couch. You're going to turn on, you're going to binge watch something. You're going to hold your belly and moan. And the kids are playing with broken glass and you don't care. And it's a terrible thing that you've done to yourself and to your world.
Well, and this also gets to the fact that your book is really not about brunch. Let's be fair. It's about a dinner party.
That's true.
Which many people would say is very similar to brunch. Why do you think it's so different, a dinner party and brunch? Just because you don't have a wait?
Yeah, there's that. I mean, so the most important thing is that it's more intimate. You're inviting someone into your home, which makes it more anxiety producing. But it's also what makes it special, because it's one of the few places in modern life where it's not about the commercial transaction. You're not at work. You're not at a PTA meeting. It's a completely free space. Things don't need to be perfect, but people can actually relax in a way that we don't really get an opportunity to. And also, it's at the end of the day when it's okay if you kind of yawn after you eat food. If you're a little tipsy, big deal. You can go to sleep and wake up tomorrow.
How did you two become such experts on dinner parties, by the way? I mean, you have hosted this show called The Dinner Party Download, and then you've now written this book.
We said so.
Yeah, we said so. We decided to write we've written the book on it, so we didn't know we had to answer that question. But seriously, though, I've been cooking for years. My mother is a first-generation immigrant, and our table was always filled with people, everyone coming through over the years. But in reality, it really took place after college, when you get older, and if you do like to cook. I just enjoyed bringing people over and creating this space. And then sure enough, we read articles in the New York Times talking about people are no longer inviting people to their homes, et cetera. And it didn't dawn on me that a lot of people have social anxiety, especially in this world of foodism, mm-hmm. where people are afraid to cook for each other. You know, they're worried about other people's Instagrams. And it intimidates them.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, like, part of it is, in fact, the fact that we named our show The Dinner Party Download. Our show, if you listen to it, isn't like dinner party centric in the sense of that we talk about dinner parties. It's organized like a dinner party. It's really kind of an arts and culture magazine show. But calling it The Dinner Party Download and having that vibe around it made people who were interested in dinner parties gravitate to it, and they would start asking us some of these questions. How do we have conversations like we hear on your show at a party? How do we break the ice with people that maybe are strangers and that we haven't met before?
Well, and you've got a lot of tips in this book for people who want to have a successful dinner party. I want to go through a few of them. First of all, you say that a dinner party should not happen on a Sunday, Monday, or Tuesday. Why is
yes.
that?
Yes. Well, Sunday, I mean, it comes before Monday, so it's already ruined. The second half of Sunday, you're already worried about work the next day, so you're not going to have people's full attention. They're not going to be able to relax.
Well, a lot of people do have dinner parties, though, on Sunday, and they do probably associate those parties with, like, Game of Thrones or some show that's coming out, right?
but that's not a dinner party.
Right.
If you're inviting people over to watch a TV show, that's not a dinner party. Right. That's a Game of Thrones watching party. That's different.
And then on Monday, you're doing the things you should have been doing on Sunday. So that's not an okay night. And then Tuesdays are just dumb. Like, let's be honest. What's Tuesday night? Now, Wednesday, we're getting on hump day. People are starting to need some relief. They've dug through their emails. They kind of know how the course of their week is going to fall. And that's when we say you can initiate parties. And then we think Thursday is really the filet mignon of the week for dinner parties. It's a great night. People are ready to let loose, and they just have to limp through Friday at work.
And if you do have your dinner party on a Wednesday or a Thursday or a Friday or a Saturday, you say make sure that you clean your bathroom.
That's right. A lot of people worry. This is one of the biggest worries that people have expressed to us is like, I got to clean my whole house and everything. If you can only clean one room and that's all the time you have, just do the bathroom and you've done at least most of your due diligence. Just get the stubble off of the sink, get the wet, Sunday circular off of the floor and just make it nice and clean, because it is one of the few places, probably the only place in your house that people are going to be at some point alone with a bright light illuminating every corner. You want to make sure that that is not a horror show. If you have time, move on by all means, but that's all you have to do.
Well, actually, that gets to another point, which is you say that you don't really have to cook that much food for a dinner party as long as you cook a little bit.
Well, yeah. We say 51% of the food needs to be cooked in your home, because the dinner party is a reflection of you. It's what makes it special. People are coming to your home. They're going to see your books. They're going to be in your house, and the food should represent you. But we allow for 49%, people can bring, you can ask others to bring dessert or bring side dishes. And you don't have to do a 7-course meal, actually. That 51% can really be, we promote something called stunt meat, which is just basically a big ham or a piece of pork or something that actually
roast chicken.
Cooks know this is very simple. You just put it in the oven, start drinking wine, have your phone beep, and then you take it out and you're pretty much good to go.
What do you think about the conversation that's happening at the dinner table, whether it should be one conversation or whether you should be having multiple conversations?
Well, this is interesting. We have a couple of rules. By the way, we're citing a lot of rules. At the beginning of the book, we have what is and is not a dinner party. And in our opinion, a dinner party is between 4 and 12 people. And one of the reasons is because of what you've brought up. After you have 12 people, it's very hard to fit them all around one table and share one conversation, which is really the only point of the dinner in the dinner party, is to make everybody, force them to come together in one place and share a conversation over something that they're jointly sharing as well, the food. So I think that inevitably that starts happening, particularly as people get a little bit wilder and tipsier. They might like break off into smaller conversations. But for at least a portion of that dinner part of the evening, I think you should be sharing conversations.
But you should not be sharing the stereo, I guess we should say. If you want to play music, don't allow everybody to have their own pick of what goes on.
No way. This is a musical dictatorship and it is yours. Or if you have one friend who you trust and respect, you can hand over the iPhone, the records, or whatever music you're using, and we cover them all in the book. They all have their pros and cons to one person, because otherwise it's going to be a complete free-for-all. You're going to be listening to Sly and the Family Stone at 1 minute, just vibing on that, and then next thing you know, Kraftwerk's going to be playing. It's going to be very disjointed, and then you're actually going to have this feeding frenzy around the stereo with people playing songs that really undermines conversation and the kind of warm vibe and glow you want to get at the center of your dinner party.
Now, we haven't talked about one of the big elephants in the room, which is the cell phone. So are you allowed to check your phone at a dinner party?
The cell phone. The cell phone is the bane of the modern dinner party's existence. We actually have a timeline of things that the dinner party has managed to overcome, challenges to the dinner party's dominance. And frankly, we're worried that it hasn't been able to overcome the advent of the cell phone, which allows you to stream kitten videos at the table.
But our proposal for the cell phone is, look, this is reality. People do have responsibilities. They do want to check in. We do have leadership that's doing erratic things at all times of night and day. So we suggest you kill the cell phone for the most part, but there will become natural lulls in conversation, or maybe transitioning from, the drinks to the dinner, where, allow people almost all at the same time, like, hey, I'm going to check my phone. We all do it at once, and then we proceed from there. I think giving those people those beats, and also their natural beats in a dinner party. When people are going to the bathroom that you cleaned, that's a natural time for them to check their phone. They're also going to check your medicine cabinet, by the way, so you should make sure that that's in good order, because when you invite people in your home, it's a free-for-all. So you can't ban the phone, but really not at the dinner table, not to resolve questions at the dinner table. And there's another element to this, Jeremy. In our book, the heart of it, too, is about how to have conversations, because that's what we do professionally. That's what you do professionally. That doesn't come natural to a lot of folks. And we talk about how to talk to people you disagree with. And we encourage people to invite maybe someone to their dinner party that isn't just a version of themselves. We're a little cheeky in this book, but we do believe in the mission of the dinner party, which is it can enrich our lives.
Now, Rico, you're in Los Angeles. Brendan, you're in New York. I, as you know, because I've worked with both of you, have lived in both of those cities. And I remember one of the first dinner parties that I went to after leaving L.A. And going to New York. it was right around the time that the Higgs boson was discovered, and the host of the dinner party had to go and deal with the food and said, guys, the Higgs boson was just discovered. Discuss. And we did for like 10 minutes. And I thought to myself, this would never happen in Los Angeles. We would never be having this discussion in LA.
There's plenty of
professors.
Someone
would be like, the
stuff.
Higgs boson was discovered. Someone go get the rights to that. I'm going to go order our gluten-free pizza.
The Jet Propulsion Laboratory is located in Southern California.
Fair enough.
All right.
Well, when you guys are both in the same city, let me know where it is, and I will come for a dinner party. And I will not be a musical dictator, and I will not have the last piece of meat. So there you
go. I would happily hand off the DJing duties to you, Jeremy. All right. You have excellent taste.
I'll try. That's Brendan Francis Noonan and Rico Galeano. They're the authors of Brunch is Hell. Guys, thanks so much.
Thanks for having us.